Blog Talk Radio.
You know what gang violence is, mostly, and the people don't want you to hear this? Somebody shoots your family member. So, of course, you retaliate.
Right,
you know what I mean? Same thing the U.S. does, except nobody even shot their family members. You know, some they see somebody bomb a school and all these people get killed, so the United States feel like, ooh, that's messed up. We got to go show them who's the real killer. This country was built on gangs. You know, I think this country still is run on gangs. Republicans, Democrats, the police department, the FBI, the CIA, those are gangs. You know what I mean? The correctional officers. I had a correctional officer tell me straight up, we the biggest gang in New York State. Straight up.
The revolution up from introducing drugs all crap to us ghetto teams. Got along for born niggas now. Play of what it be like. When will niggas see they got us leading with three strikes? Can't seem to focus, hopeless. With violent thoughts, I'm hopeless. Got the devil petrified. Hot from my heart to focus. And so I learn to earn my currency in overtime. Affiliated, clearly click a military mind. May God forgive us, over dwell inside of paradise. Thugged out and drug dealing from the womb to the block. My live mind got me surviving five rounds. My 45 got me fortified with live rounds. When shit kick, we block hit. Where I drop sick, all hell, I don't bail. Wrath up to chocolate. Forever ghetto, necessary picture food stamp. Outlaw thug niggas never left the food
camp. We got a real object from front to back. To my niggas in the world, who box is that?
DJ Black.
From my soldiers to death. When I fuck my soldiers to death. From my soldiers to death. We got the real object from front to back. To my niggas in the world, who box is that? From my soldiers to death. From my soldiers to death. When I fuck my soldiers to death.
Now I was born as a rebel, making trouble for the devil. Take this gangbang shit to a whole nother level. Can you feel me now? Armies in every city, definition of power. Players, where you can see the war is the prophecy. Survival is the strategy. Rest in peace to my comrades, that's the seat. Organize the streets in time. Yeah, any devil petrified of a nigga in his right mind. They tell us that we hopeless and hellbound. It's for the brothers and penitentiary jail bam. I got you in my heart till the day I die. Think of the damage we could do if we wasn't high. Can you bitch me low? It's the thug rap. Political contracts and bloodbath. From a Tulsa core up in the rockets, though they got you. I never let them stop me. The struggle continues.
Now, if we do want to live a thug life and a gangster life and all of that, okay. So stop being cowards and let's have a revolution. But we don't want to do that. Dudes just want to live a character. They want to be cartoons. But if they really wanted to do something that was that tough, all right, let's start our own country. Let's start a revolution. Let's get out of here. Let's do something.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer?
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
You're waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad brothers!
Free the Soledad brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over.
Mr. Jackson,
sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see you today. Get him where it hurts.
Starring Gary Dordan from TVCSI.
This is the military, David.
Free the land. Revolutionary greetings.
Welcome to another edition of Georgia University Radio. I'm your host, Bumani Shakir, and Georgia University Radio and Georgia University have five goals. Our first goal, to eradicate functional illiteracy among new African prisoners. Our second goal is to eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisoners. Our third goal, to transfer the criminal mentality to the new African mentality. The fourth goal, to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of new African communities. Our fifth goal, to help new African prisoners for release, reduce new African recidivism. Our overall goal is to transform the whole pre-industrial slave complex, which is the prison system, to the bigger institution of learning through educational means. Before I bring in our guest tonight, I'd like to go over some events that happened in history during this week. On January 29, 1908, Alpha Fraternity was founded at Cornell University and incorporated in 1906. 1983, Michael Jackson released the number one album, Thriller, which swept the Grammys, became one of the best-selling albums of all time. In 1992, blues singer Willie Dixon died in Burbank, California at the age of 76. On January 30, 1797, the Congress refused to accept the first recorded petition from New Africans. In 1863, Lincoln's handpicked Louisiana commander, General Nathan Banks, established, with Lincoln's consent, a forced labor system, saying that all the conditions of continuous and faithful service, respectful deportment, correct discipline, and perfect subordination shall be enforced on the part of the Negro by the officers of the government. My emphasis, abolitionists said the bank system brought back slavery under another name. In 1913, Ida B. Wells organized the first suffrage club among Negro women. In 1956, the home of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And Montgomery Boy Scout leader were bombed. January 31st, the First Amendment abolished slavery. You know, we all know that the 13th Amendment also substantiates modern-day slavery, which is the prison system. In 1920, the Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity was founded at Howard University, incorporated in 1914. In 1943, William H. Hastie, civilian aide to Secretary of War, resigned to protest segregation and discrimination in armed forces. In 1962, Lieutenant Commander Samuel L. Gravely, assumed command of the destroyer escort, USS Farragut. The Navy said he was the first New African to command a U.S. warship. In 1988, Doug Williams was the first New African to quarterback a Super Bowl, and he also became the MVP. On today's date, on February 1st, 1810, Charles Lennox Raymond was born in Selma, Massachusetts. In 1834, the revolutionary pan-African nation builder Henry Menial Turner was born. 1861, President-elect Lincoln told Secretary of State designate William H. Stewart in a private and confidential letter that he favored a conservative policy on slavery, fugitive slave, District of Columbia, slave trade among the states, and whatever springs of necessity from the fact that the institutions among us, I care but little, so that what is done be calmly and not altogether outrageous. You know, he was saying over again he supported slavery. 1865, John S. Rock became the first New African admitted to practice before the U.S. court. In 1870, Jonathan Jasper Wright, the first New African to hold a major judicial position, elected to South Carolina Supreme Court. In 1902, the poet and author sensation Langston Hughes was born. In 1960, the Black Student Movement launched in Greensboro, North Carolina. They were the birth of SNCC. Still not very coordinated meeting. February 2nd, 1851. Indiana voters adopted a new constitution that barred new African immigration. In 1915, Ernest Jess is the first recipient of the NWC Springer Medal. In 1948, President Truman sent Congress a special message urging adoption of a civil rights program, including a Fair Employment Practices Commission and an anti-lynching, anti-poll tax measures. In 1962, seven whites and four new Africans arrested after all-night sitting in Englewood, New Jersey City Hall. 1969, Dr. Eduardo Modeloso, leader of the Mozambique Liberation Front, was assassinated. On February 3rd, 1868, John Mercer Langston, U.S. Congressman, speaks at Alabama Capitol. 1874, Blanche Kelsey Bruce was elected to a full six-year term, United States Senate by the Mississippi Legislature. 1884, Wendell Phillips, abolitionist leader, and a major factor in the emancipation of the slaves and the passage of the 13, 14, and 15 Amendments, died in Boston at the age of 73. In 1903, Jack Robinson became first new African heavyweight boxing champion. In 1956, Arthur Reen J. Lucy admitted to University of Alabama February 7th after a riot at the university and expelled February 29th. On February 4th, 1913, civil rights pioneer and freedom fighter Rosa Parks born, 1913. In 1961, the popular move for the liberation of Angola, MPLA, began an armed struggle in Angola, France. In 1971, from the 4th through the 9th, the National Guard mobilized to quell a riot in Wilmington, North Carolina. Two persons were killed. In 1975, orchestra leader Louis Jordan died in L.A. at the age of 66. 1983, U.S. Labor Department reported that the unemployment rate for New Africa remained at a record high. In 1987, Senator Edward Kennedy, Democrat of Massachusetts, said the Reagan administration was the most anti-civil rights administration I had ever seen. In 2000, a panel named to investigate the Tulsa, Oklahoma riot of 1921 recommend that Oklahoma compensate the black survivors and descendants of the victims. Historians believe more than 300 blacks were killed in one of the largest attacks on a black community in American history. In 2005, Ossie Davis, actor, playwright, died at the age of 87 in Miami, Florida, where he was making a movie. Now, there was a couple of events happening in history during this week, more than a couple, actually. But the show will continue on. You know, I would like to welcome to the show tonight Sister T. Foster, known as Foster. I'm going to open the sister line right quick. Hold on. I'm going to open the sister line. So she can greet us all. Hold up. Greetings. So your line is open. Go ahead. How you doing tonight?
Good day. Good day. I'm doing amazing. Definitely. How are you feeling today?
I'm strong, so I'm strong, you know, I'm strong. I'd like to thank you for coming to our broadcast. I show you now that you understand. I'm thankful for the work you did, past, the present, and the future, right? You know, and,
yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Thank you for the invite, definitely. Thank you for the invite, the voice, definitely.
Oh, no doubt. We got to share the information among our people. We got to propagate. You know, we got to propagate from our perspective, you know, for the people who know what's going on. Share our stories, our ideas, our concepts, and just getting information out there. You know,
definitely.
Before we get into this, the conversation, tell the people about yourself, where you from, where you grew up at, you know, what you're about, so they can understand who's actually talking and what's going on.
Okay, definitely. So sometimes you can't tell from the voice, but I am a black woman. I'm from Jamaica, the island of Jamaica. My family is migrated here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. Go ahead.
Yes. And so my family migrated here like in the 80s, I believe, was the 80s. And ever since, I've been here in this great state of New York, or also known as America. And from there, definitely I think I've went through the mill of trying to figure out what I want to be in life, you know, like anybody else. Finally, I arrived at this, in this arena, which is firearms. I am a licensed social worker professionally. But what I've seen throughout that time is that usually people come to me when they're traumatized as a social worker. You know, you're providing them with therapy or anything that's therapeutic as far as different modalities of treatments. And after a while, that wears and tears on you. So I had to figure out another avenue and how to kind of empower my people, you know, and kind of give them the tools prior to becoming victimized. if that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah, so okay. I've arrived in the arena of the Second Amendment, and it's something that clearly is nothing new to us. We just, at this point in our lives, we really don't exercise it as much as we should in the community.
No doubt, no doubt, no doubt, no doubt. Yeah. We don't. That's a very interesting aspect in regard to the right to bear arms, right? What does that actually mean to us?
Yeah.
Is the people here in America, what it actually means of people that are striving to build an independent nation, what does it mean for people for the survival, and what does it mean to the people that have a mentality that want to destroy us? It means everything significant when we hear that term or idea of it, so to speak. You know, first off, I understand your organization called Stay Frost Defense Tactic, right? How do you come about being an owner and founder? How do you come about coming up with this? What started this, this organization?
Yes.
What were the catalysts?
Yes, absolutely. You know, and just to give a little homage to the people that paved the way prior to me, we have, you know, we call it Black History Month, but we already know that it's every day. You know, Black history is every day.
Yes, it is.
But, yes, so we have Ida B. Wells. She said, a Winchester rifle should have a place of honor in every Black home, as it should be used for that protection which the law refuses to give. Right? And that's Ida B. Wells, a Black woman, Barnett. And then you have your Robert. Yes. Did you say something?
No, I said no doubt. Go ahead.
Yes, yes, yes. And then you have your Robert F. Williams that also believed that he advocated for armed self-defense, right, in the struggles for our civil rights. So how it started, it certainly had nothing to do with self-defense or anything of that nature. There's a well-known trade show called SHOT Show, which has been, it's probably about 20 years now. I don't know if they've been in if it's been established now for 20 years or so, probably more or less, but I found out about this industry show, and I wanted to attend, but then I found out that you can only attend by invite only. So I had to figure out, how am I going to get this invite? As a person that has no experience in the arena of the Second Amendment, and this trade show is for basically the shooting, hunting, basically anything dealing with firearms, which I had no experience with. So
yeah.
I had to create a website and pretty much create an LLC just so that I can get that invite. But when I did that, I didn't realize that this would open up the doors for many other things. You know, it was basically a challenge at first as far as, you know what, I need this invite. But I didn't realize that I was really preparing myself, or God was preparing me for a bigger mission, a bigger vision, you know, and which is to educate and train and just encourage my community. And this is where I'm at now. That's how I really started out with this Stay Frosty defensive tactic. And Stay Frosty basically means to stay calm, cool, and collected, alert at all times. That's where the phrase comes from. It's a militarized term that is used out there, obviously, by the military. Stay Frosty.
You gotta stay frosty. Okay.
Yes.
So the shoot show. What exactly was going on at this shoot show you're talking? What drew you to it? You know, what exactly was going on? What took place there?
The fact of the matter is, it was an invite only, first of all, which made it a little, you know, prestigious in a way. So it was an invite only, and it's a trade show. So all of the top known manufacturers, you name it, was there. You have the Glock, you have Staccato, you have FN, you have, you name it, Kalashnikov. All of the industry was there. All of those vloggers and bloggers that are YouTubers, they're all there because everybody's like, you know, they're getting information as far as media, all of the latest news, firearms and latest machineries. Everything is there. It's a huge, huge deal for the industry. It's like a car show. you know, the car show or any other industry show. So basically, you're networking, you're meeting people, you're doing a whole lot. You know, it's like a whole 5 days or so, 4 or 5 days, and you're networking. Your people are looking for sponsorship. People are looking for dealers. It's just a whole lot of information and resources there, and so it's a big deal for the industry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I appreciate the information. I know you had previously mentioned Ida B. Wells and Robert F. Williams, right?
Yes, yes.
Well, what type of significance does those ancestors have in your life in regard to the work you do? What type of significance do they have on you, if it is any?
Well, just so you know, like I understand that we have a past, and a dreadful one at that. You know, we do have a past, which I tend not to dwell on. I know the past, and I know the energy. I try not to put my energy towards it, because that which means I won't be able to deal effectively with the future. However, I have not forgotten the past as far as those people that paved the way so that I can, you know, now own my own firearms, that I can have that right as well. And so they have done that for me, you know, the Ida B. Wells, the Robert F. Williams, you know, all those people that have paved the way so that we can actually share that natural born right of being able to defend yourself. Basically, that's what it is for me. You don't have to run and hide. You don't have to do it illegal. You don't have to do it illegally. You can do it just like anyone else, because it's a natural born right for you to want to defend your life yourself.
Okay, that's understood. But before you got your organization, your LLC, did you had to get all these certifications?
Yes.
Join all the organizations and have all the particular titles and just to have your organization?
Yes, yes. So I don't know if you've heard of the National African American Gun Association, which the founder and the founder is Phil Smith. 2000. Matter of fact, February 28th, 2015, in honor of Black History Month, that's when it was launched. And so, obviously, the anniversary is coming up. I'm a member of, and basically their primary goal is to expose, educate, and motivate as many African-Americans, both men and women, you know, as far as purchasing firearms the legal way and self-defense, you know, and taking on training and just knowing how to manipulate and just properly use a firearm. Now, I had to become a firearm instructor. Yes. And so I've got my certification through the United States or the U.S. Concealed Carry Association. I'm also a range safety officer, which my certification is to the NRA, National Rifle Association, or something like that. Yeah, the NRA. So I have those two certifications as it relates to me being able to carry out this particular these particular trainings. Can you hear me? You seem like you. If you can hear me, I.
Hold on.
Okay, there we go. Much better.
Okay. What I was saying is, how long did it take to get certified?
Oh, well,
for people,
certification.
For people who are listening.
Yes. So for those who are, and that's another thing, like especially in the New York area, as I am in the New York area, and most people believe that people can't own firearms in New York, which is definitely far from the truth. Now, to become a USCCA instructor, it's really a two-day certification, and you do have to qualify with a firearm, and you have to have your permit in order to actually sit for the class, really. So it's a two-day, which is, you could say, about 16 hours or so. It's about 16 hours. However, the real work happens afterwards. You just don't, you know, get that certification and think that you are now a marksman or you're able to teach, you know. That's not how that works. You know, it's a lifelong thing, because everything changes. Things change. So therefore, you have to always be developing, right? You always have to be learning. As much as you're teaching others, you should also be learning as well as an instructor. And that's one thing, as an instructor, you have to be developing. film. So it's a 2-day certification process.
Okay. Tell us more about Stay Frosty. Tell us more Stay Frosty. What are some of the things y'all do? You know, what do y'all specialize in particular? You said defensive tactics, right? First off, what's your definition of defense? What's your definition of that? Defensive tactics.
So,
what's your definition of that?
So one of the things you want to be clear on when it comes to Stay Frosty, right? You know, it's we have a thing that we say it's more than just shooting, because it's way really not about that. It's more than just shooting, you know. So the defensive is basically you want to have yourself in a situation where you see things before it happens, right? You're able to be proactive and not reactive, which really doesn't really involve a firearm. And so that's where the defensive comes in. It's to stay frosty. It's being alert. It's being situationally aware so that you know what's happening around you so that you don't have to find yourself in a situation where you have to be reactive. So that's what it comes down to. So one of the things we stress the most is just keeping your head up. You know, when you're in the street, when you're at home, wherever you are, you have to know what's happening around you 24/7. It may seem a little paranoid, but it's not. You know, knowing your exit, you know, knowing who, what, when, where, why. You have to be alert and not just be complacent because you're maybe at a movie theater. You know, you should be looking for those exits. You know, where's the security guard? Where's the fire alarm? Where's the defibrillator? You got to know all these things. And that's the part of being on a defense, you know, that you're ready. And that's what it comes down to, being ready, staying ready so that you don't have to get ready.
No doubt.
Yes. And so our core, or should I say our market, as far as our people that we really focus on, is our youth. Our youth is really the focus, because in our community, we as a people, even for myself, we start out too late with pretty much everything. You know, we start out too late with everything. We're always like number last. So one of the things that we're trying to do is to expose our youth to firearms, because eventually they get exposed. And it's better for them to get exposed to it from a person that's an expert or that means them well, you know, in a safe environment. And so that's one of the things we really pride ourselves on, you know, in inviting the young or the youth in to show them that it's really an inanimate object. Nothing happens with this firearm until you touch it. It's really your intent behind that object or that thing. It is not as bad as what people make it out to be. It's the people that's bad. It's not the actual firearm. And so we want to make that clear, that we don't need to be villainizing an object, really. You know,
yeah.
It's like when people say the devil made me do it. No, you did it. You know, and that's what it comes to. So we really focus on our youth, because we understand that, you know, you train up a child in the way it should go. You know, at the end of the day, If a child is exposed to a firearm, they know what to do or what not to do, you know, and that's what it comes down to. In addition, there's so many avenues to this firearm that we don't speak about in our community. There's so many things that is beneficial to our youth. You know, we talk about these football scholarships, these basketball scholarships. We talk about all these different scholarships that, you know, it's a one in a million chance, where we have this arena out here, the shooting sports, that we're not benefiting from. And, you know, truth be told, we can benefit from it because somebody always want to sponsor a black kid. And I'm not even trying to be funny, you know. So, therefore, you could use that to our advantage.
The shooting sport. Tell a little bit about what exactly is the shooting sport? Doesn't it have like some kind of foundation, organization, structure behind it?
Yeah, there's many different shooting sports, many different organizations, definitely. But it's a shooting sport. It's competitive shooting for our youth, and it's about accuracy, precision, speed, and things like that. But there's bow and there's crossbows, you know, bow and arrow. There is air rifles. There's BBs. There's so many things. There's the Olympics, to be on the Olympic team, you know, and so instead of waiting for the draft again, that one in a million pick at the NBA, you have a better chance becoming an athlete in a shooting sport. You know, so the shooting sports is track and skeet. You know, there's so many things that's out there for our kids. It's not just, again, football. It's not just basketball. It's not just dancing. There's skeet shooting. There's trap shooting.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's a lot. There's a lot. There's bullseye. You know, as they get older, you cross over. There's bullseye shooting. There is high-power rifle. And when you think about how high-power rifle, it's really an AR in a sense. You know, they have other ones, but ARs, you know. But again, they get acclimated to this machine that is so scary out there. But it's just that. It's an object. It's a machine, you know. And so if we expose our youth to that from an early age, 9 times out of 10, they see it down the line. They don't want to, it's like, been there, done that. You know, they're like, okay, been there, done that, had that already.
Okay. No doubt. I have a question. You mentioned the youth. From your experience, what exactly is the best age to start a youth off with getting comfortable with a gun or training? What's the best age from your own experience?
So I would say here in New York, we, depending on, the range here is 12. In another, we also have five-year-olds as well, 5, 6, and they're starting out with like the BBs and things like that. So it depends on that child. It depends on their understanding. It depends on the parent. The parent knows best, and they will know when the child is ready cognitively, you know, and as it relates to that. As it relates to putting them in a situation where they would be using like a BB gun or something like that. But really and truly, any age when it comes to firearm safety, which is not the live fire aspect, but it's just learning about it as far as information, any age, like any, if you teach a child ABC, once they can say their ABC, they can learn do not point the firearm in an unsafe direction. They can learn keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to shoot. They can learn the universal firearm safety rule, which is extremely important, which a lot of people, even professionals, they do not comply with. So I would say any age, once a child is able to actually vocalize or communicate, you can start teaching them the universal firearm safety rules. Always keep your firearm pointed in a safe direction. Treat all firearms as if they're loaded. Keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to shoot. Know your target, what's in front of it, and what's beyond it. And those safety rules that I just mentioned, that can be applied to anything in life. You know, we tell our kids, don't point at anybody. It's rude. You know, you don't point a firearm at anyone. You know, that's just not what you do. You know, so my thought is, if a child is able to comprehend, you start teaching them the foundation, which is the universal firearm safety rule.
Okay. Okay. I was looking at your particular bio you had sent to me.
Yes.
You know, I was thinking that you're a psychotherapist, right? You know, you provide psychotherapy. How does psychotherapy relate to handgun training, rifle training, you know, arm training? How does it relate? Is it therapeutic to you, or can it be used as therapy to cope with certain things in your life? Could be a form of release, just from a therapeutic perspective.
Okay, so try not to do, and I know people do it. And matter of fact, I just did a post that this is wellness, and I was talking about training and practicing and things like that. Like, it's a part of our wellness. And when I say wellness, I mean about just being feeling safe, feeling secure to know that, you know what, if something were to happen, you would have the skill set to manage, at least have a fighting chance. And that's what I mean by when I say this is wellness, the shooting. Now, as far as me, I try not to go there with that whole this is therapeutic when it comes to shooting, because I really don't want nobody next to me. I really don't want anyone next to me on a range if they're mad or if they're feeling sad. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And if they're to release something, I really probably wouldn't want to be next to that person. So I've heard people use that term, that this is a release and this is this is a therapeutic and things like that, I try not to use that because, again, I personally wouldn't want anyone that is feeling under the weather at the range.
My next question is, by you having all these certifications and you training somebody, are you able to assist them in getting the proper hardware and machinery for themselves? Are you able to help them get the right gun or the right rifle or that they need? Do you have access to that type of material, or they had to get it on their own?
Okay, this is a one stop. I am not an FFL. I'm not an FFL, I would say, as yet. And the FFL is basically a federal firearms license. You know, you're able to sell and purchase, sell firearms, you know, as far as a business. That is not who I am. Not yet.
Okay.
However, as far as recommendation and just saying what works for me, I've done that, and people have actually taken up my suggestion in purchasing the firearm or the ammunition. So I've done that, yes, because it's really up to you to kind of find out what works for you. It's like anything else. It's like a hairstyle or a pair of shoes or a pair of jeans. You want to make sure that it suits you and it fits well. You're comfortable within that, because what fits me and what's suitable to me may not be for you. And so it's really important that anyone that wants to purchase a firearm, that they try several before purchasing said firearm, right? They want to try. There's places that would allow you to try out many different firearms. Or if you have a friend or so that owns firearms, you go to the range with that person, you can kind of test out what they have, in a sense, try them, you know? But I wouldn't recommend just purchasing the first firearm that you hold in the gun shop, which I've done. You know, I wouldn't recommend that. So yes, I can provide them with the resources. I can provide them with, you know, suggestions and things like that as far as where to go, what to get, what I think would work. But ultimately, it's up to them.
Okay. There's another question.
Sure.
When it comes to women, what do you recommend? What do you recommend for the woman as regards to a handgun? What do you recommend for her, and why would you recommend it?
I don't necessarily have a suggestion for that, because I know that some people say that a female should have these small little, you know, smaller firearms, or they should, It varies. It depends on the person. You have to be comfortable. You have to be able to control that recoil. You have to know what it is that you're doing. So it could be anywhere from a 22 to maybe a 45. It, you know, it could be anywhere. It could be a shotgun. It could be a 12 gauge. It could be a 20 gauge. It could be anything. But you have to. You are the one. Well, you're the one that's going to be using that to defend yourself. So therefore, you want to make sure that you're on target. You want to make sure that you are hitting the target or hitting the threat, you know. So it's really up to that person. As far as a beginner or to start with, you know, you want you want to go to a store that's going to allow you a range that's going to allow you to use or to try out the various firearms. You know, Smith & Wesson, you have a Smith & Wesson 2.0. Pretty good. M&P, it's pretty good. It's compact enough. And if we talk about concealed carry, that's another thing. As a female, you got to think about so many things, how you're dressing. You know, do you wear close-fitted clothes? Now, your whole wardrobe has to change. You know, you have to buy things that's going to conceal your firearm. You got to worry about if you lift your arm up, you know, someone's going to see it. Some people think some people may believe that it's cool and it's flashy and it's a burden to think about this thing that you got to wear every day. You know, putting that thing in your pocketbook, you might as well leave it home, you know. So it's so much to think about. I often say that, you know, everyone, just because everyone can have a firearm doesn't mean that you should, because it's not for everyone. It isn't.
Interesting. And why do you say that?
It's a burden. You got to think about it. You know, you have to know the law. If you don't know the law, you will be a felon. You'll be a felon in no time. You have to know the law, because at the end of the day, this is not a right that they want to give people. right? And so they see it as a privilege. And therefore, any misstep, they're ready to take that thing. There's all these red flag laws that they have and things like that. They're ready to take it, you know. Right now, even in my state, it's like they can't even figure out. There's so many restrictions at this time. It's like you might as well, again, leave your firearm home because you can't go here, you can't go there. So where can you go? Your living room? So it's a responsibility. You have to know. If you're going to a post office, you have a firearm. Are you going to leave it in your car and lock it up? Okay, what if your car gets what if you get carjacked? What if it gets stolen? You know, it's so many things. You have to think about these things. If you're going somewhere, are you going somewhere where they serve alcohol? Or are you going to drink? You know, so you got to think about all these things while you're out there with this firearm. You know, life was easier when you were, quote, ignorant, when you didn't know or you didn't care. It's so much easier. But when you take responsibility, it becomes a burden. And you can't unknow it because it's too late.
Okay. That's good information. My next question is, what are some of the more accurate rifles, from your opinion? What's your own experience? What are some of the more ones that are accurate to you?
Well, yeah. we can go with the AR-15. It's, and even though that's one of the things they're really coming for, as far as they want to call it an assault rifle, you know, but I don't know what, anything is an assault. Any object can be an assault. A pencil could be an assault. You know, it's a verb. So I don't understand why they keep calling it an assault rifle when it doesn't move unless you move it, you know. So an AR is pretty accurate. That's an accurate, and it does what it's supposed to do. So anything I speak about, this has nothing to do with target practice. This is all about self-defense at this point. So if we're talking about self-defense and having something that is good, that is lightweight, that is powerful, but yet still have a minimal recoil, an AR-15, Armalite 15, is one of the best.
Okay.
In my opinion.
Okay. Okay. Also, what about the ballistics in regard to a short range and long range? What would you recommend, or where have you experienced the best experience with from a long range and short range aspect of things?
Repeat that for me.
I said, what is your best experience from the aspect of a long range shooting and short range shooting? What is your best experience?
I'm in New York, so we don't have the luxury as far as long range or outdoor, it's very minimal for me at this time. So most of my shooting is more close quarter or short distance. It's not the long range, maybe 50 yards or so. But again, all that takes concentration. It's the shooting fundamentals, right? You have to practice. Everything we do, we stress training because this is what it is. Training. You got to think about it. If you have a surgeon or a doctor that doesn't go for self-development or go for training, and the only time that they actually go into the operating room is when they have a patient, that's a problem. So it's the same thing. You have to train as much as possible. So if and when you are in a situation, you are able to be precise, be accurate. Because if you miss and you hit a bystander, you are going straight to prison.
Yeah. You're right about that.
Yeah. So the AR-15, it's definitely more accurate. You know, you got the AK-47. It's a little cheaper than AR-15, but we don't have that here. Yeah, you know, they outlaw a lot of stuff unless you're a law enforcement, you know, but it's a little bit more dependable in comparison than the AR-15, you know. But we're limited. You know, while they limit us to all these things, guess who has all free reign to all this stuff that's limited? The criminal, you know, for lack of a better term, you know.
Yeah. Well, if you're doing things illegally, you're gonna have there is no rule.
Exactly. Exactly.
If you have a criminal mentality, there is no rules on a criminal mentality. It's a free fall. It is what it is, you know, in that situation. You know, I know we were talking about what's preferred and what's best. If a person is, especially in a close, you're talking about a close quarter combat aspect of things, a close quarter relationship. If you're in the house, what would you use as the best close quarter apparatus? What would you use?
So I have a shotgun. However, as I become more knowledgeable in this world, you know, shotgun is great because you have this thing called double odds. You know, it's pellets that it shoots out many pellets, which means more, 9 times out of 10 you're going to hit your target, right? So most people go for that. However, you know, your shotgun probably only holds 5 or 7 you want to say rounds or shells, which means you got to reload quickly if you are bad shot, you know, for close quarters you're talking about. Now, it's also very loud, which means we see this on TV where people shooting indoors and it's like the ears are not ringing, which I don't understand. But that's TV, you know, that's television and entertainment. Now, obviously, when adrenaline is going, maybe, you know, maybe it doesn't happen or whatever. I don't know. But I also have something, what I would recommend is something called a PC9. It is a carbine. It's very, it's low recoil. It's not as loud as a shotgun. It does not shoot out a whole bunch of pellets at the same time, like BBs or pellets, I should say. It doesn't shoot out a whole bunch. It's only one, which means that you have to be proficient. You have to be a marksman and get your target. So that is a good recommendation. As far as the handgun, a handgun is great because it's small, it's compact. You can kind of maneuver. You can have the phone in your hand while you have the handgun, the pistol in your hand. You know, you can do that as well, which is great. But again, you have to practice. You have to train. It is not easy how we see on TV, television, where people point and shooting, and they're getting their target. You're doing headshots. It doesn't work that way. It comes back down to training. And sometimes, you know, I don't want to say it's a luck of the draw, because sometimes it happens where, you know, no matter how much you train for something, sometimes, you know, the results doesn't add up. However, we just recommend training. You need to train. But shotguns, people also think when you hear that shotgun noise, you know, people get scared. These criminal-minded people are coming in with bigger things. They don't care about no shotguns. That sound doesn't affect anyone these days, it seems like.
And also,
people have to understand that there's such thing as called self-defense rounds. You know, again, it's just knowing that the target rounds that you, or the ammunition that you use at the range, is not the same one you carry for self-defense. There are different type of ammunition. You know, in the house, in the house, you know, if you shoot an AR-15, they do have defensive rounds for stuff like that. But you want to make sure that you have the right ammunition in your home defense firearm. Because if not, that thing passes through. The penetration is serious. It hits your neighbor's kid, hit the dog. You got to know what you're doing. Again, we're watching TV, and TV is like, you know, it's misleading. You know, it's very misleading. Because therefore, if anyone that's going to become a firearms owner, it is a great big responsibility. You have to have the right rounds. You have to know exactly what you're doing when you're doing it. Because just because you're defending your life and that person that walks into your home comes in to, to harm you, so you believe, and if you have an exit strategy, meaning you have a duty to retreat in your home or in your state, you got to retreat if you can. If you can safely do so, you do so. You just don't shoot someone because, you know, they kind of enter your home. This is not – my state is not really one of those states.
True indeed.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, especially if you invited them into your home. and you get into a situation where it's an altercation. If you invited them in your home, it changed the story a little bit because you invited them there. Now you're going to get your firearm or whatever it is to kind of defend yourself. You invited them there. So you have to know the law. The law is tricky. The law could be unfair, you know, even if you're defending yourself. It's almost like when you hit somebody in the back with your car, like you're the one that's wrong when they're the one that stopped short in front of you. You know, even though you were traveling at a moderate, you know, good speed and they stopped short because that's the job they do. They do those type of those things where people do with car insurance fraud. And they stop short in front of you, hit them. 9 times out of 10, it's going to be your fault. You know, same with the shooting. Yeah. If you shoot someone in the back, you better figure out how did that happen? Why did that happen? Even if, you know, they're in your home.
Interesting. You know, I know. The way I want to ask, do you teach a person how to clean and maintenance that gun firearm as well, or that's something they got to learn their own?
Yes, if you something that they want, definitely. It's rather important. You don't want to find out that your revolver doesn't cycle when you need it, if you get me, you know? You want to make sure that you keep your firearms clean. You want to maintain them. It's like anything else on your body. It's your good physical health. You got to maintain the good physical health of your firearm. It's like anything else, maintenance, that checkup. It's really important, really important, because what you really don't want is also for you to be at the range and there is some type of malfunction that caused your firearm to, again, malfunction, and it doesn't end well for anyone. Because firearms do blow up as well.
Yeah. True indeed. You know, so in regards to that, how often should you clean your firearm?
So everyone has different rules. It's like bathing. Do you bathe every day? I think you should, but, you know, everybody have their different ways of doing things. Some people, every time they go to the range, they clean their firearm. I'll be very 100% transparent. I am not one of those people. You know, it all depends. 500 rounds through your firearm, some people may clean then. It depends on how many rounds, what you're using, how dirty your rounds are, because there's some ammunition that's really, really filthy and dirty, which means you shouldn't be using it. But sometimes that's what people can afford because ammunition is expensive. So it all depends on that person, how often you go to the range. Some people do it by how many rounds, and other people may do it, you know, if I go today, I'm going to clean it today. So it varies on that person and their lifestyle. There's no set way of doing or how many times. It depends on you and your firearm.
Okay. You know, I understand that you're also a community advocate. So,
yes.
Does that mean that you go into the community and pass out propaganda literature about gun rights or the uses of guns, or that means something different? What does that actually mean?
What it looks like. So, as an advocate, now TIDA is those vigils where someone lost their life to violence. And so I attend those in my community. And I usually don't say anything. You know, I just pay my respect in the sense, but I don't usually say anything. However, one of the things I do not like to hear when I'm there is that, you know, guns kill people. Again, people kill people. So I do offer where any organization that links up with me and they want me to come in and give an overview of firearm safety, that's something that I really live for, because the information is priceless. Firearm safety is priceless, you know, so that's something that I do when I get the opportunity to do so. I never turn down. It doesn't matter who it is or what it is. And usually these are not even paid. It's a community service.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's what I do. I definitely reach out to all of my representatives, and I know there's a topic that they don't like to touch. you know, because really and truly, I really wish that people, when they come to see me, that they wouldn't have to pay for it. But unfortunately, ammunition is expensive, and I got to charge. Otherwise, if this was a way where the representative would actually see value, when I say representative, I mean my state assembly, the senators, you know, Congress people, if they saw value to this, they're not going to see value to this until someone, I guess, noteworthy in a sense, brings it to them, if you get what I'm saying, you know. Yeah. And so I still advocate, I still push, you know. I know they see me because I'm in their inboxes, you know. I tag them on everything, you know. I'm sure I'm probably blocked to show them that we are training, we are ready. You know, at the end of the day, you know, they can't do nothing about us being able to carry conceal now. You know, we have a right to carry conceal at this point here in New York, and therefore, if that's the case, you know, people need to train. And told some of the instructors that we have here are charging ridiculous prices for people to get their concealed carry training, and that's bad. And I'm almost thinking that the government, but those entities are okay with it because they don't really want people to have their firearm. Yeah, so, and again, I don't want to give government any control when it comes to those type of things. However, this should be a community service. This should be like anything else, the way they give out bread at the churches, you know. It should be just like that, you know. All the schools should have a program, a rifle program, or even a firearm safety program. From K to 12, all the schools should have that free of charge to these children or to our youth. Maybe that would minimize, you know, the impact of all these school shootings, but not only school shootings, but also people bringing these firearms to school where, you know, they're having it slack in their bags, it's falling out, you know, or they're showing off with it. This would help to minimize, if not eradicate, some of that. Giving people knowledge so they can make better decisions.
True, indeed. I agree with that. You know, as you mentioned, how people treat people in regard to the type of business. Have you experienced any kind of negative energy or experience any kind of racism by being a new African or a black woman doing this? Have you experienced a kind of racist or white supremacist or anything like your any presence because of who you are?
I can't say I have. I cannot say I have. The only type of, I guess, the only reservation that people may have, or I wouldn't say people, the representative that these people keep voting for, right, the same people that keep voting for these people, the only reservation is that, you know, they won't, they will not support it. You know, they're not supporting it. That's the only thing that I've experienced right now. But as far as the community itself, you know, I've had people, people welcome it. Because it's new, right? It's new, and it's also being led by a black woman. You know, it's new. It's a new thing, you know, and it's been well received by the community. However, they keep voting the same way, if that makes sense.
Okay. In regard to propagation, the State Frost has propagation that like leaflets or pamphlets or any kind of material that you use, that you pass out in the community, or that's something that you're thinking about doing, or have you did it before already?
So I had, like, in a range, I have a flyer that's up in a range for those who want to contact me or connect with me. I do a lot of, which I met you online, a lot of the online presence, you know. I haven't actually made a literature to pass out in the community center. That is my next, certainly will be. Where in certain community centers I will, you know, ask for permission to kind of like either to hang it up or to give it out, whatever the case may be. But online so far has been really good. You know, the Facebook and the Instagram has been very good as far as getting new leads or people just asking questions, because I'm, you know, I don't charge people for asking questions. Like, questions are, like, that's what life is about, being able to empower people, give them information that's the right information, you know. So definitely that is something that I will be doing, especially for our seniors, because we always often forget our seniors. seniors are not necessarily on Facebook or on Instagram or any of the social media, and they too need to be able to protect themselves, you know. So that is something that we'll be going to. This summer, a lot's going to happen this summer. I certainly do not want to forget our senior. I don't want to forget the people that are the disabled population or differently abled population. Do not want to forget them, you know, because they have a right also to defend themselves, you know, within their capabilities.
True indeed. You know, again, I want to thank you for coming to the broadcast here. You know what I'm saying? I don't thank you for the work you did in the past, present, and the future. You know, at this time, I'm about to open the lines up for any caller, any question, comment, or statement.
Sure.
At this time, please press 1. You can talk to the guests. Anyone has any question, comment, or statement at this time, please press 1 to talk to the guests. Now open your line up. Please press 1. Yeah, this is a very educational information you putting out there. You know what I'm saying? It's always needed to educate people, especially so they can have the decision. They can have the information. They can make a particular conscious decision about what they want to do with the information that they have. But it's always a good thing, right?
Absolutely.
You know, it's always a good thing.
Plus, ain't nobody
false, like you said. But go ahead, sis.
Oh, I was saying no one's coming to save you. We say you are your own first responder. I am my own first responder because I know that there's nobody coming to save me. Look at Katrina, you know, and Katrina, look what happened over there.
They're real talk, you know. You better defend yourself.
Yeah.
On all levels. On all levels. I know you mentioned the seniors, right?
Yes.
How significant is that seniors must need to train as well? What is the significance of that? How important is it?
So it's extremely important. And when I think about seniors, I'm thinking more of not necessarily, say, the shooting, which is okay, but it's more so their homes. How vulnerable is the home to a break-in? Or to somebody to push them in their home. You know, it's more so for them to learn about their surroundings or situational awareness, make sure that they don't have bushes or weed growing up over their windows or having the proper lighting, you know, camera system, you know, if they could afford it, stuff like that. Just making sure that their front lawn or everything is maintained so people don't think that there's no one living there. There's so many things when it comes to your home and security, you know. So it's more of that. So, you know, as you become seniors, they need someone to assist. Some need assistance in maintaining their lawn, you know. There's bushes where people can hide, you know, so that they're lurking in the bushes waiting for them to get home and push them in their home, you know, and rob them or things like that.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. Make a whole lot of sense.
Absolutely.
It definitely make a whole lot of sense, you know, especially in that apparatus of being in a place that basically overpopulated like New York, you know, so people constantly around you, people can bump against you, anything, you know, and take your stuff or whatever, you know, you're in an environment where you know, it might feel people like feel like agitated or whatever. But hold on, let me open the line up for the caller. I got a caller, 706-350. If you have any question, comment, statement, please just leave it on. Your line is open. 706-350. Go ahead, your line is open.
Peace, sister. I just wanted to give gratitude to you for the program that you have organized and your efforts, because it's definitely needed within our community. And I wanted to ask, some people might say bringing gun education or safety could in turn promote and educate more with gun violence, with them not being educated. So what would you say are some differences you have seen in people that you have trained, like older and younger, as far as their personalities and thoughts and habits after having or going through your training?
Well, I appreciate that question, and good day to you. Thank you for the question. That's a beautiful question. So for our youth, one of the things that we give out to our parents, our guardian, it is a questionnaire, because just because not every child is suitable, right? Or not everyone is suitable to even go through a training. So that's one thing we have. It's a little questionnaire for the parents to kind of decipher if the program is appropriate. That's the first thing. They have to have that a bit of a maturity. That's the first thing. Right now, people aren't going through, not everybody's going through trainings and having an education, and it's a massacre out there, right? Lots is happening out there. Bloodshed. Mm-hmm. So thinking we need to do something differently, right? We need to educate people. And one thing you will know, law-abiding people aren't the ones committing these crimes. They're the ones that's being victimized, and that is the problem. So the more firearms that people are thinking about, these are going to be the law-abiding people that's able to actually defend themselves, preserve their lives, and that's what it comes down to, because we're defenseless out there, you know? So I definitely get what you're saying in regards to bringing more firearms. And you know what? The training aspect, you could only hope and pray that people will see that the importance of training, because you're not going to be able to make people go training. Right. And that's probably the scary part. You're not going to be able to make people go training, but as a law abiding person, you would think that people will take that responsibility and understand the importance that you have to train in order to become proficient at this thing. And nine times out of 10, a law abiding person may not even like a police officer that's been on the force for years or whatever the case may be. They don't fire their firearms. You know, the majority of them do not, you know, so. I guess the point that I'm making is, as a law-abiding person, you will exercise, you will understand that just because you can shoot doesn't mean you will, because there are consequences. And if you look at the statistics that are out there, it is not the law-abiding people that are committing the crimes, you know. I hope and pray that I never, ever have to draw my firearm, that I would never have to, you know, never have to. But I know that if I have to, I'll be ready in a sense where I've been training. So it's better to have than not to have at this point in our lives. Because people are getting harmed. People are getting harmed unprovoked. You understand? Back in the days, you know, you did something to somebody, they retaliated. Now people are getting slaughtered unprovoked.
Yeah.
So at this point, it's not the law-abiding people. Now, when it start being the law-abiding people that's committing these crimes, then obviously they're no longer law-abiding. And
right. Thank you.
Yeah. And thank you for the question.
Okay.
Yeah,
you got another?
Yes, she has another question.
You got another question, too? So that's it.
Oh, no, that's all. Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. If anyone have any question, comment, or statements, you press 1 at this time. I'll open your line up. If you got any question, comment, or statements, or you want to say something, please press 1 at this time. Okay. I don't see nobody else right now.
The other venture that we mentioned is seniors and people that are differently able. There's another venture that I'm definitely want to do, if not this year, next year, but hopefully this year. I definitely want to be able to reach the hearing impaired population, as far as firearm safety, and that's something that we're definitely working on.
In regards to that, does that mean that you're going to have to take a different type of training, a different that specific geared toward the hearing impaired, in regards to how to a different type of training that doesn't necessarily have to do with the shooting?
So we have they actually have an ASL firearm instructor, that I'm connected to. And it's the hope that we can be able to collaborate on something.
Okay.
So I don't necessarily have to learn, say, ASL, because I would have someone that's able to communicate with that population for me.
Oh, okay. I got you. I understand.
Yes.
We have another caller up in the opening line of 614-285. If you have any questions, comment, or statement, please do so. The time your line is open, 614-285. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Elder Mama Gandhi, and I'd like to greet you, sister. Bless
Good
you
day.
For doing this. We
Good
need
day.
This desperately. I want to give you a scenario and preface it by letting you know the situation is a true one.
Got it.
Okay. 71-year-old elder in a wheelchair, blind, lives in a neighborhood that is maybe 3 to 4 days a week, shots fired. No assistance or support. Because of the circumstances and environment and economics, there's no ramp, and has been a shut-in for over a year and a half. Holding on to sanity. How does she learn to defend herself?
Wow. And you said
that's what I said.
Wow. You know, wow. Wow. And this is where community comes in, really. Even this program, where someone's hearing this, they could reach out. And this is what it is about. You know, I'm really sad to hear that. One thing I could say is one of the, and obviously mentioned, she's a senior. And oftentimes, or sometimes, our seniors don't have access to say, things like Zoom, et cetera, because we do offer that an option as well for individuals that have access to Zoom to do a training program. It's not the actual physical live fire and things like that, but we got to do better. I don't really know how to answer that. We have to do better collectively. Whether she has family or not, we're all family, you know. So I'm so sad to hear that. That's a true story.
Yep. Oh, she's a true story speaking with you right now.
Oh, wait, that's you? Oh, I'm so sorry. Wow. Okay.
It's even worse, but I just only gave you a summary.
So let me ask you, first of all, do you have access to Zoom?
To simplify it, I'll just say no.
No?
Okay.
Well, you know, yes, that is pretty tough. Do you mind you and I talking off air?
Bomani, hook her up for me, please.
No.
Bomani knows how to contact me. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Oh, okay, yes, because I definitely would like to talk more to figure out, yes, I would certainly love to have a conversation, yes, wow. And if you don't mind, which state are you in?
Ohio,
all right. Bomani has your contact information. Is it okay for him to give it to me?
Right, Bomani?
True indeed, yeah.
Yeah, please, if it's okay, definitely. We do have an instructor out there. Out there in Ohio as well, yes. So let's see what we can do. Definitely.
I thank you in advance.
Yes, I'm in New York. Wow. Okay. Okay. Yes. Let's take it one layer at a time, because it's a lot. There's a lot of things that. Yeah, and I'm also a licensed social worker, so I'm on that social work mode right now. Like, okay.
That's excellent, because that's a part of the problem.
Yes.
Thank you for that as well.
Yes, yeah, you're most welcome. Yes. Okay, all right. Well, I do appreciate definitely appreciate you calling in and sharing that. That, you know, it takes a lot. Yeah, okay. And remind me of your name. I know it was longer.
Elder Mama Hundy.
Elder Mama Hundy. Okay, I'm Foster, as in foster care. Okay. Okay, you will be hearing from me once I get the number from Mr. Bahami right there, because he's going to give it to me. Yes. And I'll definitely try to connect you with our Ohio lady.
That would be wonderful.
Yes. Yes, I'm definitely going to give her a call. I'm excited about it, because this is what community is about, building and linking. So I'm hoping that this will be just like, this will be good. Yes.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank
Absolutely.
You. Thank you, Bomani.
Oh, one question. What part of Ohio, if you don't mind me asking?
You're welcome.
I'm in Olentangy, Ouachita, misnomered Columbus, Ohio.
Okay. All right, I'm just taking a little note. Okay. Okay, got it.
Thank you, Bomani.
You're welcome, your mom, Connie.
I hear
you. Have anything? Oh, yeah, okay. Oh, I want to ask you if you have anything else to say.
Do you have anybody else in queue?
No, I don't have any money.
Okay, then I'll ask a little more.
Okay.
I know there are blind people who indulge in various martial arts, self-defense.
Yes.
Are there blind people who learn to develop their hearing or their smell or their first eye or in a way to also defend themselves, especially with a firearm?
Ooh, that's a good question. That is a good question.
I'm full of them.
They do have, you know, there is association for individuals that are visually impaired for shooting, just to let you know that.
Really?
Yes. You know what? We are limited by ourselves. You know, we put our limitation ourselves. And so, yes, there is a sports for that. Or there are people that are in that population that actually shoot. It's International Blind Sports Federation. So to answer your question, yes.
Another question.
Sure.
Left hand, arthritic, a gnarl. Right hand, nerve damage.
Mm-hmm.
How would she shoot?
Okay. So I've actually had a young man that had some deformity with his hand. And he was able to shoot very well. Young, I think he was 14, if I'm not mistaken, 13, 14. Yeah. And so it all depends on a firearm, whether it be a pistol or maybe the person would probably do best with a rifle. So the rifle has like 4 points of contact, which gives you that support that you would need. So it all depends. So And they also, obviously, there's some alteration with firearms, if necessary, people that need the alteration, like anywhere else. If you need a wheelchair ramp, you know, there's always some alterations that can be done, you know. So, and everything with practice, you know, everything is, it's all about training. It's all about practice. Practice makes progress. So it's all about practice. Yeah. You have individuals that shoot with their feet, you know, because they don't have the limbs, hands.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's an inspiration for me. That means I have no excuse and it can be done. I like that.
It can be done. It can be done. Absolutely.
I like that. And I'm glad I finally am exposed to someone who actually can and is answering my questions, because I've been asking these questions for quite a few years.
Oh, wow.
And I've been pawned off on other people or just pretty much ignored and made to feel, you know, like, oh, that's a stupid question, but I never got an answer. So,
yeah,
you know, and I'm starting to regain at least the sense that the only stupid question is the one that's not asked.
That exactly is, you're absolutely correct. And someone else is always thinking of that question that you asked, but they are afraid to ask because they don't want to be made, you know, felt little or, you know, belittled by others.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So growing, and I'm getting to know me even more.
Yes.
I'm also learning to see with my, what they call the mind's eye.
Okay.
I'm actually learning how to see with that. I've got about a maybe 70% accuracy. That's not bad compared to not seeing anything at all.
Yes, no, that's a good number.
The more I try to see things, the better it's getting.
I definitely appreciate your question, and that one about the visually impaired that got me thinking. Like, okay, but yeah, there are people doing things out there you won't even believe it. You know, despite their limitations in a sense, or and their disabled or differently ableness. You know.
Mm-hmm. Wow, I'm smiling now. You know.
Yes.
I don't always have occasion to smile, but I am right now.
My heart is full to hear that. I appreciate
you. Thank you. No,
thank you.
Bless you, sweetie. Bless you. Bless you. Bless you.
Likewise. And we're going to get it. Reach out to you, definitely.
I'm trying to make sure I ask everything that I can in this medium of you. I used to be, I'm not originally blind and wheelchair bound. This is a new thing for me. The wheelchair within the last maybe 20, 25 years, the blindness is more in the last 6 to 10 years.
Okay.
So that tells you something about me.
And yes,
I used to be, I still am to the extent that my limitations allow me, but I used to be more active in African-centered, pan-African,
okay,
black nationalist type activities.
Okay. And I know you mentioned, like, you haven't been out in a year. Did you say that?
I have not been outside doing anything like grocery shopping and nothing.
Wow.
Nothing. I haven't been outside. I have no ramp.
Wow.
And prior to this place without a ramp, I was homeless. Prior to that, I was living in my rental property for 16 years. They decided
wow.
to sell it, and it just snowballed from there.
So just to, if you want to share, like, so do you have, like, some grocery service or something, like
it's
medical?
Horrible.
Oh, wow.
It's horrible in the sense that it's nothing like going to the supermarket. Oh, it's nothing like going in the backyard and
yes.
picking what I want to eat today. I don't have
yeah.
that option anymore. As for grocery shopping, someone else has to do it for me.
Mm.
And the tragedy in that is if I want tempeh or tofu or vegetable croquettes or veggie lasagna,
mm-hmm.
if the person's diet is not similar to mine, I've gotten some horrible stuff.
Right.
I couldn't eat it.
Right.
Just money wasted.
Right.
You know? They'll bring me back beef and pork and...
Wow.
I mean, I smell chitlins cooking next door and I'm at my toilet throwing up.
Ooh.
Because I'm used to living in a single home.
Single home. Okay. Okay.
You know? And now I'm in a situation where I can smell cigarette smoke and all kind of
yeah.
garbage cooking, and yeah, it's rough.
So you do you do telehealth, like as far as medical?
I'll share with you how extreme I am. I am homeopathic and herbal.
Okay,
to the extreme.
It.
I have never given birth to any of my babies in a hospital.
Okay.
And when I first
okay.
started, I didn't know anything about what I was doing.
Doing, okay. And you mentioned something. You said, so the support, you said babies. So I'm assuming, well, you know what they say when you assume, but just from going off on a limb, you've had children. And so the support, what does that look like?
Well, that's an interesting little twitch,
okay.
because I remember about those activities I told you about.
Yes.
So an example of that is because of who I am, my children's doors were kicked in. They were trampled on horseback. And I was beat into miscarriage because
oh.
of my activism.
Oh.
So now my children, at first they were traumatized. Then they were warned by the system not to allow me to have anything to do with my grandchildren. And now they are just fit to be tied, and some don't speak to me at all. Others see me as an opportunity to just take from me whatever they can get, whether it's cash or some other thing. And the others are just, you know, afraid.
Oh, wow.
Because they don't want to be penalized by the system or their peers.
Hmm. Okay. Ooh. Bit heavy there. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And last question. You mentioned there's no ramp in your building. Are you the only one that have that, you know, I don't want to say wheelchair bound, but to have assistance with the wheelchairs? Are you the only one that's there in the building?
Well, I haven't been here long enough. Remember, I stayed in a place 16 years,
okay.
and the ramp was put in. But
okay.
This place is new. They're slumlords.
Okay.
This is a whole new experience for me.
Oh, man.
This whole everything is no trees, no grass, no.
Right.
It's in a flight path. The train sounds like it's sitting in your house. Buses going in both directions. Motorcycles.
So what do you
truck?
What do you?
This is a totally different environment.
So what do you? So I guess this would be my last question. So what do you do?
I don't care.
For your, what do you do for your wellness? Like, what does your wellness look like as far as? Because it seemed like you're in a totally different environment from what you're used to. So how are you coping? How are you, like, you know, just dealing?
To be
know?
Honest?
So, yeah.
Honestly?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sitting here now listening to George Jackson University Radio.
Okay.
I sit and do pretty much, I'll listen to audiobooks.
Okay.
When my phone is working. I have no other technology, no TV, no radio, no
TV,
cassette deck, nothing. Before coming here and losing my home, I drew, you know, I'm an artist. You can see my work on my website. I've written 11 books. I sing in 13 languages. I play and make African instruments. Until this happened, now I don't have any of that. Everything got left.
Wow. Okay.
So I just sit. I just sit.
Are you able to sleep through nights? Like, are you asleep?
My futon bed got left.
Okay.
What the you can tell I'm a Greer, a Jolly, and a Marabou because I tell a story when you ask me a question instead of just answering it directly. But my futon bed got left, and what the furniture bank brought me was a stained, stinky couch that didn't fit in the house, so we had to leave it out on the curb. The box spring didn't fit, so we had to leave it out on the curb. I have a queen size mattress, which is, if you can imagine, potholes, just a row full of potholes. That's what this mattress is like.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, they brought me a mouse. This is the furniture bank.
Okay. You said a mat?
They brought me a mouse.
A mouse.
Yep, mouse.
A rodent? Oh, so, oh, okay.
In the furniture.
In the, yeah. So you,
maintaining a sense of humor.
Yeah, yeah.
That's keeping me sane.
And I know I keep saying last question, but here's one more last question. I'm like a preacher. We always got second closing, third closing. So
that's cute.
Do you have any, you know, who do you talk to? I know you're here. We're having a conversation, but do you have like a close friend or, you know, someone to kind of like a sounding board or someone just to have a conversation with? Because you have no television, even though you're not missing anything on, you know, it's. Oh, especially that news. You're not really missing much of anything. But it's nice to know the weather every now and then.
Do you have a close friend?
My big sister.
Oh, beautiful.
We started a, well, not yet. Hold on a minute. You know, I have a storytelling style. I don't just say yay
ahead.
Or nay. Started an a cappella ensemble in Philadelphia, and she was like five or six years older than me, and we did a lot of stuff together. And later on in life, we talked almost every single day for years. And 2 weeks ago, she passed.
So you didn't get to go to the ceremony?
Nothing.
Oh, my goodness. So you're going, are you, oh boy. So how are you grieving? Like, how, wow. Okay. I think we definitely need to take this offline and figure out. Yeah, definitely. Wow. Wow, I'm so sorry to hear that. Wow.
My daughter asked me a question when she got older.
Mm-hmm.
And she explained to me why her and her siblings never talk about the attack against us when we were in Philly, where the cops broke the doors down, came in on horseback, trampled them, and beat me in the miscarriage. She says, she said, Mama, I know you said that you know why you were born. And you said your assignment this time is to help our people be able to improve their karma. He said, and I know that. I'm not ready, Mom. And I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you just talk about it so other people can benefit from that experience. I said, but that's the promise I made when I was in heaven negotiating for a body this time.
Mm.
So I don't have an issue about talking about the things that go on because I know there are people who hear it and maybe they can make whatever adjustments they need to make to deal with what their lives are about and how we benefit from what their lives have been. And she said, well, explain it to me. She said, because I don't get how you willing to do that. I don't, we mad at you because you always right. That's not natural. How do you do that? And I said, because I keep my promise. I made a promise when I was in heaven trying to get back here, and I haven't broken it.
Hmm.
I said, what are you doing? I'll do what I want to do. I said, therefore lies your problem. I said, because if you think I like everything the ancestors are telling me to do, you're wrong. I don't.
Right.
I don't even agree all the time, but I do them because I gave my word.
Yes. Yes. Question.
If she doesn't talk to me anymore, as it's upsetting for her.
Question.
Yes.
If you had to make a choice or a decision to say one thing that would be priority for you right now as far as changing your situation or one thing about your situation, what would be the most pressing thing for you right now? What would that thing be?
Something that I know that works that I did when I was trying to get out of Philly with my children. Some of y'all get together, have a fundraiser, and I'll be able to survive this. Thank you. what I did when I left Philly, I called in all my markers, everybody who owed me and some who didn't. And I did a 12-hour fundraiser, and I raised $8,000, and I was able to get out of Philly.
Okay.
It's easy if a bunch of folks get together and do it, because I can't do it this time.
Right. Now.
That would be my priority, you raise the funds to move
to somewhere else. Now, just, definitely heard you. Now, would a ramp being put in change your situation any?
In part. And
I
have an agency here that's, well, I don't know. They're so contradictory right now. What's going on within the agencies? Like, for one counselor came out and she said, we're not going to put in a permanent ramp on a place that you're looking to move from. I said, well, how about a suitcase ramp? Oh no, that wouldn't fit because of how your steps are. And so I get rid of her, and I ask the supervisors for a different aide, a different counselor. This counselor comes, and she says, yes, you qualify. We make it portable so that way when you move, it could go with you, and we'll get you a hospital bed.
Hospital bed.
Here we go. I don't want a hospital bed. Mm-hmm. I'm 71. I'm not dead.
Right.
I might find me a husband. You know what I mean? I don't want a hospital bed.
That's right. That's right.
You know what I'm saying? I am not dead yet.
Definitely not.
It was fucking air. No, I had really practical reasons for not. One, it wouldn't fit up the steps, just like the box spring didn't.
Yeah.
Two, it's got metal bars, which are great to keep me from falling out the bed, but don't help me when I want to get out of the bed. And
are you ambulatory without the wheelchair?
If you could call what I do ambulatory, then yeah. I do more butt scooting than anything else.
Oh, okay.
I'm the champion butt scooter.
Okay.
Okay. You know what I mean? Like scooch. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But.
Okay.
Yes. I hold on to the wall. I lean towards the wall, and I walk sideways to get from the bedroom to the bathroom. That's about all of the walking I do.
Okay. You're not falling, are you? Because I'm thinking like you don't
not
fall.
What?
You don't fall, like, you know, like fall.
Most of the time,
if you walk,
it's on the toilet seat or on the mattress.
Mattress.
Otherwise, I've got about a 40-degree angle thing going where I'm leaning towards the wall.
Got it.
And going 1 foot at a time to my left or my right.
And the qualifications for, like, home assistance, home health aid, or personal care, do you fall in that category?
Oh, yeah. I just met last week with a new potential aide, but she was from Ethiopia. Wait a minute. She was from Ethiopia. She doesn't speak the language well. And I made a mistake. I didn't remember that usually if you don't speak English well, you don't read it well either. And I desperately need help with things like reading my mail, you know, having someone to read to me.
And she didn't like the idea that this is a shoot 'em up alley, and I don't blame her.
Oh.
You know, this neighborhood is unsafe for her coming in and out and going where she's going. And I don't know if this is going on around the rest of the country, but what, the Fiat Boys or something like that?
Yeah.
And anybody that comes to my house is usually peeking out the window to make sure that these young teens are not stealing their car.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
I've learned a lot about you, definitely. That is lots of information, lots of information.
But I'm going to definitely keep up my end of the bargain and sterilize, even if it's beyond the self-defense portion, because it's more than just self-defense at this point, you know.
Exactly.
So, yeah, so certainly I'll make contact, and I have your number.
And send me a text. Make sure you send me a text, because my phone is horrible. Send me a text. Say who you are.
Okay, will do.
And that you're trying to call me. And then I can click on your phone number and call you back.
Okay. I'm sending you a little test. I just sent it to you. I said, this is Foster. This is a text.
My phone is telling me that you sent me a message.
Yes, so I just sent you a message. So you have my information.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool. Yes. It just read it to me.
Yes.
Very good. I'm tickled.
No. Okay. So you mentioned the visual part. Is it 100%? Or as far as your visual?
In my right eye.
Okay.
The doctor put this fluid in it, and I told him I was allergic. You don't know everything. And him and his assistant held me down. They were able to get it in my right eye. 3 days later, I was blind in that eye, but I fought them off on that second one.
Wow.
When I realized what they were going to do, the extreme and extent they were willing, all bets were off. I maintained my left eye for about 8 or 9 years until my house was taken from me, and I've been without, and it has gotten worse because I just don't have the herbs and homeopathics.
And Mama
Tati, anymore.
Your sister, she was your only, that was your only sibling?
I have no female siblings.
Okay.
I have one male brother who's a half sibling, but everybody else is extended family.
I may have misunderstood something. The person that passed away like about 2 weeks ago, who was that?
She's my big extended family sister.
Okay, I thought I heard sister. Okay, good. Okay, I got that.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
All right. Yeah. We were very close spiritually. We made harmony together. You know, because we were singing together, a cappella. And we could just communicate and talk. She taught me so much. She had a wonderful sense of humor. I delivered one of her babies.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's something else I do. I deliver babies for black families.
So would you consider a doula or just midwife? Unofficial or so.
Remember the type of lifestyle I told you I had?
Yes.
Yeah. There's no name for that.
Okay.
But that's
okay.
The kind I am. I guess Google will come as close as you can, because midwife in Ohio, that's illegal.
Yeah, okay.
That's
okay,
how determined
okay.
they are to keep us from doing what we need to do for black families.
Mm, okay. All right. Well, I'm really excited. I'm really excited for the future to think that, you know, I'm really want to put this thing into practice. You know, the linking and building and connecting, you know, having this conversation with you is not by chance, right? So really hoping that some type form of manifestation can come from this, you know, for you and the situation that you're currently in, certainly. And I'm not just speaking words because I'm on air, you know, this is out there. So definitely. I'm really hoping and praying. And obviously hoping and praying, we got to put action behind it at the end of the day. And certainly that's what I'm going to do. Yeah.
Thank you, precious heart. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, this is, definitely this is wonderful. It's wonderful. You start out with one thing, you end up with something else, you know, the true thing, you know, so this is good. This is really good.
Yeah, it's also a lesson in holistic thinking and action, and it lets us know that the gregativity is not an African action. It's not an African way of seeing life and doing things. We're more holistic. We're not really segregative, even though we've been trained and conditioned to be so. It's not really who we are. So I thank you. I am extremely grateful and humbled. Because it just, all I see right now is potential.
And sometimes that's something that we need, and that's sometimes that's all we have, you know. But, again, we have to make sure that we put some of this stuff into practice, you know. That's what it comes down to. Again, we can hope and we can pray all day, but, you know, they say faith without works is dead, right? So we got to do some work. There's lots of work to do.
And I'm really, when I analyze my own self and critique myself a whole lot, especially now that I'm in the condition that I'm in, and I find that when I look back at my life, I'm really glad I did everything I could then because I can't now.
That's how
I look at my life and I see that Ma'at and Tahuti are pleased and proud of me. And that's what matters to me.
Parcel.
All right.
Parcel.
We're there.
Parcel, Monkandi. We have less than 5 minutes left. I'd like y'all guests to get her final thoughts.
Yes, absolutely. Again, that conversation, Makanji, it was great. It was amazing. Sometimes, again, we start out with one thing. We think that we have it, you know, what the mission or the vision or the thought is, and it turns into something else. And sometimes we just got to allow things to flow, you know. But for as it relates to our self-defense, understand that we are responsible. We are our own first responder. There is no one coming to save us. Therefore, we have to be ready, stay ready. Take it serious. It's just as important as the education, as the health, medical or health insurance. It's as important as employment in our community. Self-defense is extremely important because we can have all this great stuff, live in a luxury home, have the best school, the best paid job. But if we can't defend ourselves from whether, again, domestic or foreign threat, then what do we have? You know, we can't wait for the government. There's not enough police for all of us. Therefore, we are responsible, you know, but we have to do it in a safe manner. We have to do it in the right manner. And that's what it comes down to. We have to practice. We have to train. We have to educate ourselves. We have to unlearn a lot of the things that we've learned that's hurting us, that's harming us. So all I can say is for everyone to stay frosty. You know, you want to stay calm, you want to stay cool, you want to stay collective, but you want to be aware, you want to be alert, you want to see what's going on, know what's going on at all times. And at the end of the day, this is a collective. We want to help one another. This is why we're here, to help one another. Human beings, we depend on each other, you know, for our survival. So therefore, we need to make sure we look out for our seniors, look out for a differently abled population. But also, we're all role models. Therefore, we have to be that role model or that person, that model citizen for our youth at the end of the day, because they're watching. They may not be saying anything, but they're watching, and they're duplicating our behaviors. So we have to make sure that we are putting our best face, best foot forward at all times. And
okay.
That's that.
Okay, I appreciate that, sister. Again, I thank you for coming on our broadcast to show you not to understand. If you're at any level one social comrade behind enemy line, you're looking at Georgia University. We'll be found on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We also have a new website, which is www.georgetechuniversity-tju.com. Again, it's www.georgetechuniversity-tju.com. Long live the resistance, long live the guerrilla, free the land, and peace and love.